I would like to call to order the Thursday, November 20th, 2025 Shoreland Planning Commission meeting. Carla, will you call roll, please?
Chair Brinson?
I am here.
Commissioner Cabe?
Here.
Commissioner Fry?
Here.
Commissioner Lynn?
Here.
And we are expecting Commissioner Povic, but Commissioner Hadley and Vice Chair Mosier are both absent with notice.
Great. Thank you. Moving on, approval of the agenda. Excellent. Approval of our meeting minutes from November 6th. Any changes, comments, thumbs up? Public comment, do we have any?
We have no public comment this evening. However, I did forward a few written public comments to you.
Yes, those have been received.
Yes.
Okay, we will take a momentary pause. Would you like us to pause until Nate gets here?
I think we'll introduce him. He is on his way down.
All right. So moving on to our study items, tonight we have an economic development update.
Great.
And our presenter is running to the table.
So, yeah, I'll give Nate a second to settle in and catch his breath, but while he does that, we've got Nate Dom here this evening, the city's economic development manager, here to provide an overview of economic development in the city. Last spring, the commission had a couple of updates on the economic development strategy that Nate was leading the effort on. It's since been adopted by City Council, so I'm sure Nate will speak to that a little bit tonight, as well as provide an overview of other exciting things going on in the city related to economic development. So without further ado, go for it, Nate.
Thank you, Andrew, and thank you again for your patience with me.
No worries.
Sorry for making you wait a little bit there. So, yeah, as Andrew mentioned, I'm Nathan Dom, Economic Development Program Manager for the City of Shoreline. And I think the last time we were here, this was in development, and now we're in implementation phase. So, as he said, I've got some updates on some things that are happening and in the world around us and within Shoreline, but they fit neatly into our economic development strategy, as you'll see. First off is sort of just where we are with the economic climate, economic and development climate. We're seeing, large-scale development, which really dominated our development in Shoreline over the last few years, really slowing down quite a bit. The multifamily projects in our pipeline, you're probably familiar with this, are still in the pipeline. So the last time I brought a presentation with lots of projects to show you, and one of those examples has actually since been canceled. That one was canceled probably before the last time we all met, but there have been others that have either been kind of frozen due to the high interest rates and the reluctance of investors to invest in projects at the returns that folks used to be kind of accustomed to. So those are just really making these larger projects very difficult to pencil. And so those, we've seen at least one project of that scale has the permits expired. And that was the project next to the 148th Street light rail station. And we're still seeing activity in the smaller scale, so the townhomes or accessory dwelling units or kind of cottage or just kind of the smaller projects that can be accomplished with maybe just one parcel, maybe kind of a smaller team, smaller crew, smaller investment required and less debt. Those are kind of going to continue to be where the main impact that we see from development probably for the foreseeable future. I think it's gone on longer than anybody expected. Basically, the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank was sort of where things really came to a grinding halt. We will see. We'll see how long those conditions continue to persist. But as I said, that smaller scale private sector development is really in line with the missing middle housing policies that the city just adopted recently. So that puts us in good shape in that sense. And then as well, we're seeing a lot of opportunity in the small business and smaller scale commercial, and that's of great interest to the city. So we're in pretty good shape, given that our plan is really built around some of that smaller scale initiative. So we'll get into that a little bit. So this is the City of Shoreline Strategic Plan, the economic vitality element. So this is kind of the vision. What we envision is well-connected, convenient, walkable neighborhoods. And it goes on to describe just, I think, pretty consistent consensus in the community of what we see economic development as doing for us, improving the quality of life, bringing more services, and things along those lines. The economic development strategy is also built around the feedback from our resident satisfaction surveys that we do every 2 years. The city gets very high marks in areas that we control directly, like our streets and some of the services we directly provide. But some of these other elements, and even overall quality of life, is a pretty high ranking compared to our peer cities. But some of the areas where we don't score as well are these sort of, kind of the economic vitality indicators, the place to work, as a place to shop, as a place for dining and entertainment options. Those aren't our best scores in our survey. They're not the areas where we knock it out of the park. And as you can see, those are actually going in the wrong direction. And so that sort of leads us to what we heard from the comprehensive plan. We heard a lot of comment about all of those sorts of elements as being priorities for the community. And I'm kind of zipping through this because we just did this in February, which was like yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, it led us to the economic development strategy. And you'll remember this graphic is like a building at the ground floor or the base, you know, of the building, or the base of the pyramid, or the lobby, the kind of the main space that people interact with. The bottom of the building is the small businesses and startups. So it's not the bottom of the list, it's the base or the foundation of the whole thing. And so these other things sort of stack on top of that: placemaking, tourism and things to do, and you know, all the other elements of the economic development strategy. But first off, we'll dive right into small businesses and startups. And this is largely unchanged from what you saw back in February and how it was adopted. One of the elements that came from the engagement and outreach was this encouragement for the city to look at its own property, and city-owned property being an opportunity for a lot of the things that we talk about in this plan. But really, a lot of enthusiasm for small business and a big emphasis on that, particularly women and minority business enterprises, and just really recognizing the strength of the SBDC here in Shoreline. They are doing phenomenal work with advising to startups and small businesses. They have incredible metrics for what those businesses go on to do in terms of hiring and revenue growth or access to capital to grow their businesses. And so that's a big opportunity for us to maybe reduce their waiting list, because it does take 6 or more weeks, I think, to get in there and get that appointment with that advisor. And so that's an area of opportunity. There is one kind of bright spot, this small business that's coming soon in the Richmond Beach neighborhood. It's an existing business location, but it's getting kind of a new life and a new approach to serving that community. And I think this is just one of those examples where we find somebody happens to live in the community, from the community, and just really knows exactly what the community needs. And so there's a lot of enthusiasm in the neighborhood for this project that's under construction now. It'll be a grocery, coffee bar, deli. They're planning some outdoor seating along the street, outdoor dining area. That's something that the city has long been trying to encourage and find ways to facilitate. So that's something to look forward to there. And they'll continue to serve, you know, still continue to be the candy store of record for that neighborhood, which is something very important to folks who have had sort of successive multiple generations have relied on that for their source of sugar and treats. And they're pushing towards a January 2026 opening. And I guess that's a great example of small business, just in that, like I said, it's not It's not something that I did or really anybody here at the city did, but we can facilitate when they step up and say, we want to do this thing. And so we work with them to try to identify just how they're planning to use that outdoor right-of-way space for their outdoor dining. How can we kind of make sure that fits into their timeline of wanting to open by January? Lots of different folks within this building interacting with them to try to help kind of make sure things keep moving along and that they are getting their questions answered, even maybe questions they don't know to ask. And so I think if we're doing it right, we're going to be seeing more of this. And maybe people who will be kind of coming to us for these permitting or other regulatory right-of-way functions, maybe the one and only time in their life that they're ever going to do it. And that's the nature of small business. And so if we're successful in working with those folks, we're going to accomplish a lot of our goals. And our planning office, the permit process improvement team, the work that they've been doing, just really revolutionizing that process of how things move through our system. I've worked here for now, I'm in my eighth year, and it's just night and day. And just the rapid pace at which new solutions to improve that process or new tweaks are being brought in, it just really is continuous, and it's been great to see. And that the more we can do that, the more these sorts of things that are, I think, are really reflective of what the community wants, are going to be happening in our community. And another area where we could sort of support small business and support those entrepreneurs when they step up or step forward or come looking for support is the city acquired the office building next door to City Hall, just to the north of us here, a little over a year ago now. And this has really been identified as an opportunity. There's some vacancy in that building. There are some partners at the Shoreline Chamber of Commerce in other community organizations that serve small business and serve diverse populations with economic empowerment. There's a real starting to, form this interest, this common interest among a number of groups in maybe partnering to make use of some of that vacant space and create something there. It's something really exciting that could facilitate small business development and growth and really create a community and a space for that to happen. So that's something that's exciting that there's a lot of enthusiasm for as well. And we will continue to keep you posted as that moves along. Again, these are all interrelated, and so we'll talk a little bit about placemaking now, but it's also going to have an element of the small business being, kind of a key part of that as well. But one of the things, again, recognizing the challenges in the economy for large-scale, major capital-intensive initiatives, these innovative activations and pop-ups, night markets, and creative gathering spaces, events, and things like that are turning out to be a really good thing for us to be focusing on, right? Because, again, those large capital projects that kind of transform the built environment of our community with just millions of dollars and complex projects those are all pretty much on hold for now. And so this is really, this strategy turns out to be really well timed with that. And we've had some success in that area with our farmers market, just growing all the time every year. The light rail station openings were these great events that were put on by community partners. Didn't have to be a city thing. That was such a great moment for our community that we reached that level of maturity that something big like that could happen. It didn't have to be us or some other government entity. These are the community partners, homegrown in our community, putting on those events. And similarly, people have stepped forward with these concepts around food truck hubs and shipping container art and artisan village concepts, which those two things are actually kind of very interrelated and compatible. And another pop-up that's happening right now just outside this wall is the Shorelights winter light display, which is also proving to be kind of this small business opportunity. We are in the park at Town Center, really reinforcing that being our central, hub green space in the center of our community, really partly inspired by the some of the recent pro-democracy rallies that have happened out there just shocked all of us as to the scale of size of a gathering that that park could host. I think for many years, maybe especially before thousands of people were living in apartments looking down on it, I think maybe rightfully so, we thought, well, that's a park that sort of no one will ever use because it doesn't have a big parking lot or doesn't have a lot of parking. But it's a great example of how the transformation of the community can really do surprising things. There's a lot of people who just live there now. And maybe a lot more people are used to getting around on transit with all the transit-oriented development that has been built in recent years. So leaning into that, this winter light display, just got the numbers on the inaugural lighting ceremony from just back on Saturday. That event had one food truck, but it had 1,100 people in the park over those 2 days. Most of the, I was there on Saturday, so I can tell you most of the people were there on Saturday for that lighting event. We had just a huge crowd that blew all of our expectations out of the water. So that was really wonderful to see. And literally hearing people oohing and aahing when the, you know, switch was flipped for the lights to go on. And the one food truck, you know, had a corner on the market. So we partnered with a group that has a lot of expertise in food truck hub gathering places, and I'll talk a little bit more about that shortly. But it's a great example of how we can kind of redefine the space with events and activations like this. Similarly, the Greenhouse Winter Market, same weekend, same Saturday and Sunday, so 2 day event. This is another great example of that kind of evolution and maturity of the community. We've partnered with Shore Lake Arts, the Shoreline Farmers Market, and for years held a underground holiday market here in our garage. And we discovered that Sky Nursery was having a craft market primarily for BIPOC craft and arts folks in their greenhouse. And what a beautiful space to be on a winter day. And why are we competing with you guys? If you guys are doing this, do we really need to do our own? And so asked them and the farmers market to partner. They had a great relationship and partnership already because of just the proximity to one another. And they were just really thrilled to do that. Not only did they not ask us for additional funding to do it, but in fact, when I said, well, I don't think we have money to ask you to do this, they said, I don't care, just let us do it. We want to do it. They were just very excited. That is another example of something that was just completely beyond all expectations. I don't know if any of you were there. Good for you. You must have gotten there early. I know there are a lot of people who were parking like over a mile away from there. I mean, it was just a complete mob scene, and it was really exciting to see that. So those are great partners. And again, it frees up some capacity for the city. That used to be an almost exclusively city-run event on city property, staff from various departments pulling overtime, working all weekend, doing all the setup and takedown and everything else, you know, and the marketing and everything. We were able to kind of support this with some of that marketing, but none of our staff were required, and none of our funding, you know, required to do it. We just tacked it on to our contract with the farmers market, and like I said, they were happy to do that. So that was very exciting. Shore Lake Arts, this coming weekend on Saturday, they are doing their own thing as well. So again, just kind of growing this from one event that was 1 day into two events, one that was 2 days last weekend and one that's 1 day, 2 days from now. And they're closing down the street in downtown Ridgecrest. They've got something like 40 crafters and vendors and food trucks and music. And so it's just really growing the scale of what the city can do by really, you know, trusting in our partners and encouraging them to run with it and then helping it however we can for them to do it. And it's, again, kind of helping to redefine the space and helping all of us as a community to sort of re-envision the place we live and activate it, and do that placemaking by being in the place and making it a place by all being there and gathering together, which was really the original intent of our support for the farmers market in the beginning. So I mentioned food trucks briefly, but starting tomorrow, we'll have multiple food trucks out at the light display, so encourage you to come down back to Town Center tomorrow night when we'll have boba, pizza, wood-fired pizza, Vietnamese food, Mediterranean Levantine cuisine. And I don't want to belabor the point, but there's something for everyone, and that's what we like to say about Shore Lights, is multiple different kind of themes to the lighting display, and the same goes for the food offerings. And so we're just really hoping that it'll continue to just bring the community together in a celebratory and nourishing way.
Maybe provide a compliment. My partner is an artisan woodworker, has done the underground market, and we have experienced these markets in many, many places. We checked out that one. He wasn't vending this year. But the fact that the vendor fee was so amazingly low, it was $40, which is unheard of, and really, really helpful, and like sort of made us feel like, oh, they get it. They understand what it takes to be a vendor. Profit margins are not very big. And so to have access to a market for folks where you're actually like entering and not saying, okay, today I have to make $3,000 to just sort of cover the cost of being here. You can sort of do smaller markets, which allows the community to gather. So I just wanted to make sure that I said that. So thank you for letting me interrupt.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that perspective. And I neglected to mention, you know, these things are all so interrelated. Both that Greenhouse Winter Market and the Shore Lake Arts event, those are creative economy initiatives too. You know, it's a big part of our priority too. And making those really accessible. We didn't have to tell them to do that either. You know, that was, again, really came from the farmers market, that they said, hey, and Sky Nursery as well, saying, we're not going to charge you guys anything to put this on in our space. And we encourage you to make that fee as low as possible. And I think that the farmers market actually decided to use those funds to combine those dollars to donate them to HopeLink. And so just so much, you know, positive, you know, things have come out of all of that. And it's just a great, and I think it's really nice to see the rewards that I think Sky Nursery had, because I could see their lines were crazy for their cash registers as well. So, you know, it's really good when you see good deeds that are rewarded, and it's there's a business case to be made for doing good, and when that turns out, it's a really nice thing to see. So thank you for saying that and highlighting that. And you know, I should mention too, with the Bites at the Lights, we're calling it, we recognize one, what you just said, kind of trying to have as low of a barrier as possible. I believe the only expense, besides typical expense of running their business, for the trucks to come to Shoreline is the business license fee, which is, I think, $40 or $45, so similar to that. But now they can operate in Shoreline forever, right? But we waived the fees for the park food vending concession permit fees. We are also encouraging community groups, neighborhood associations, or school PTA groups to come and enjoy Shore Lights, and we will waive those park event permit fees during the course of Shore Lights in this location only. So we've kind of recognized that we want to sort of remove barriers and make it possible for folks to be successful in our community. So this brings us to, you may have heard this, it's already been adopted by some folks in the community around here, and they're calling it the North City Commons. That didn't come from us, but that may very well be the name. It's sort of taken on a life of its own. This is the Seattle City Light-owned property just to the east of the Shoreline North 185th Street Station, where we are in the very early stages. I've never seen this much public comment for something that we are only just kind of starting to think about. And so you might think it's much further along than it is. But we have had some initial engagements with a group that does this as a business model, family-owned commercial property in downtown Auburn in the pandemic, you know, just kind of recognizing office, not the strongest asset class to have in a pandemic, and did this kind of brainstorm, and they came up with this, you know, food truck sort of community that we've seen very successful in Oregon, really all over Oregon, but Portland is really famous for it. and they were able to successfully implement that here in Western Washington, one of the early examples of that. They've since turned this into sort of their business consulting practice. Their main thing that they do is developing these food truck community concepts. This one is from Maple Valley, but it shows probably pretty similar to what we might consider doing with that Seattle City Light property. We've had early initial conversations with them that have been favorable about it. We've had conversations with our state legislative partners about seeking some funding from the capital budget in the legislature in this upcoming session. They are interested in supporting us in making that ask. But you can kind of see here, there's a small building with some covered dining seating. It would have restrooms, obviously. That's what we'd kind of repurpose that existing building on the site. And then you just sort of have fire pits and picnic tables and food trucks. And what's nice about this concept is, again, with that focus on women and minority business enterprises, really wanting to support those businesses that have those additional hurdles or barriers or disadvantages. And food trucks are such a diverse population represented in those entrepreneurs. And it's an easy way, it's a relatively more simple way to get started, right, than a brick and mortar space. But one of the challenges that food trucks have is, well, with our, you know, Bites at the Lights, they'll be able to be there through January 11th. And some of them are really excited about just having that one location to be for even that long. But if you think about food truck needing to kind of pick up and move and be on social media and people find them wherever they are and it's someplace different every night, perhaps, these sorts of community hub locations allow them to really build a following and be a little bit more of a long runway to really nail their product market fit and find that audience and have them come back and find them. And what this group that does these has found is they'll go on to upgrade their truck. They'll get a bigger or nicer truck with, or maybe some appliances that they couldn't afford before, or they get two trucks or three trucks, and now they're really a growing business, or they go to a brick and mortar location. That happens just as much, but it is such a great starting point, an entry point that's accessible. And so what I really like about that is, again, this gives us that opportunity to kind of bring in those unique local small businesses that are just getting started, that are going to build that following and maybe go viral because they've just got this really great, you know, burger or whatever their product is that people just fall in love with. And that can happen here for us, you know, in Shoreline. And that's, again, we've got a lot of developers building new product, and that's pretty tough to fit those unique startup businesses in, not just because the rent is higher because it's brand new and expensive, but because the developer is borrowing money to build it, and the banks really have all the say in the world, and it's their money that the developer is kind of playing with and owes back to them, and they're the ones who will not typically approve a tenant that's kind of an unproven, so we have this chance to build the following here in our community by, you know, supporting these kinds of small businesses and helping them get, you know, helping them build their following and get up and running and then grow into that more permanent space. This is just another example. This one's in Everett. It's proposed in Everett. And again, you can just see kind of some limited sort of plantings, landscaping, but kind of communal picnic tables and fire pits and string lights. It's inspiring to see that there are people out there who do that, who we can work with and who can support us. And it also encompasses and supports the creative economy potentially in that location. One of the things we want to do is just grow the artists and art in our community as the city grows, and that means space. There needs to be a place for artists. Because that's what is happening with growth is that it's pushing, it's pushing all the time on the capacity of the community as the lower cost spaces get, you know, demolished and replaced with new, higher quality, higher cost places. And so finding places for artists in our community is really important to make sure we grow our creative economy as the city grows. That location with the food truck hub and near that 185th station is also where a local entrepreneur is focused on for her concept and is talking to that same group and to us and all of us as we're brainstorming what would be possible there. But these shipping container art hub and community gathering places are also a really exciting feature that we've seen. You can rent a shipping container for $150 a month. It's $250 for them to drop it off and $250 for them to take it away again. Obviously, there's more to it than that if you want to have any electricity or things like that in there. But not, you know, it's a scalable and it can be as bare bones as you like. And so that's really appealing to this artist and entrepreneur who wants to share more of that space. Maybe have a few shipping containers and maybe each one has a wall down the middle. And so there's two different artists or vendors that are sharing one, and they can have a canopy out front that they can kind of open up to their customers and maintain the container itself just mainly for stock or storage and just to be able to kind of keep everything in that location. So that's really exciting to see those food trucks and then artists or craftspeople, slightly different audience maybe, but there's some overlap and definitely supportive of one another. So that's another opportunity that we see as we explore that location and what's possible there. And with just, again, some of the people who have come forward and advocated that we could be looking at these as opportunities. This is just an example from up in Canada that I thought was a compelling example of how, you know, simple it can be, as you see on the upper left, or how, you know, dramatic and colorful and elaborate it can be with murals and double, you know, stacked units. So there's a lot of different ways to do it, which is exciting. So from this point on, I think I just go through a little bit more about the other areas of the strategy. You know, with World Cup coming next year, that's something that I've learned ever since that announcement. I learned just how soccer crazy this community is. and so that has been something that there's been a lot of enthusiasm about. Whether we will have 750,000 people come to Seattle or not is, you know, kind of remains to be seen, just what the impact will be, which countries are playing here. All those things are really kind of up in the air. And then, of course, there's looming threats by the president to take it away from us. You know, I don't know if that's going to happen. But in any case, we're sort of proceeding with just the enthusiasm of this world international event, this world sport, as a way to gather and bring people together across communities. Because already in Shoreline, there are 80 languages spoken. More than a quarter of our residents speak a language other than English at home. And what do we know about soccer is it's even more popular everywhere else than here, you know, than it is here. And so I think there's just a lot of enthusiasm for building some programming and activities around that. And that sort of plays into that more things to do that we heard so much in the comp plan process, attractions, just generally things to do, and tourism is kind of what we ended up calling it, because it was just that simple that was what we heard from folks. So we did partnered our Shoreline Chamber of Commerce and the city and other community members kind of came together into this Shoreline World Cup committee and have these three pillars. One is small business readiness, one is the light rail station area activation, and one is youth engagement. And they really started, this group of volunteers leaned into that with this Kids World Cup back in July this past summer at the Shoreline A, B fields. And we brought a vendor village together of artists, musicians, you know, products and food to really just lean into the international element of this. Partnered with the Seattle Youth Soccer Association to do the tournament portion of it, but kind of wrapping around it with all these international community and economic development to just add flavor and character to it, made it a really lively kind of all-day event for families. And opening ceremonies with from JHP Legacy Group, and then, of course, the soccer, and the kids had a great time. But it was one of those things where whole families came and really hung out and spent time And it was a great thing to see for how much the community responds when we kind of try to bring those opportunities out. There's not much of a segue to be had here, but I wanted to just touch on the remaining sort of sections of the strategy while we're here together. One of those is the jobs housing balance. Again, we sort of spoke earlier about this. The housing is going to probably continue for the foreseeable future to be in those smaller scale infill projects, conversions of homes to duplexes or building new duplexes, triplexes, that sort of thing. And we'll continue to look for those opportunities to bring those jobs to Shoreline. A few of us advocates in the community and myself met with a relatively senior person at Pfizer from the Bothell North Creek campus there about just sort of introducing him to Shoreline and some of our demographics. He already knows about Shoreline Community College because it's the best or one of the best training programs for the life sciences industry. And we already have a lot of those folks residing in Shoreline, a big part of our population. And so there's an opportunity there. We'll continue to explore that. We'll continue to lean into media production. The Shoreline Community College is, again, the reason that we have a film office and have had all the success we've had in that arena. And so we'll continue to look for those opportunities and to be ready for when that capital, when those markets open again and there's investment and things are happening again. But now's a great time to make those relationships and tell our story and explain what the opportunities are so that we're kind of ready when that comes. So we'll continue working on that over the period of the strategy. And we'll continue to collaborate with our partners that, you know, where the economic growth will hopefully be, a rising tide lifts all boats. And the growth that we've seen in the last few years with the Shoreline Chamber of Commerce, that was one of those community groups I mentioned who hosted one of those light rail station. I think even if you asked any of them a few years ago, if they could have imagined themselves putting on an event of that scale for the whole community, I think they would probably have laughed at that question. And now they're at a scale, they've grown so much and they've developed their organization so much that we really can rely on them, and we do. And the more they grow, the more we're able to rely on them as a partner and do more with partners who can do more right along with us. Same thing goes with the Shoreline School District, with Shoreline Community College, you know, helping reinforce them and their finances and their enrollment, and providing the supports that they need, doing our part to, you know, align things to where they really are supportive of their goals. Feeds back to so much benefit back to us as well for so many reasons. So that's a little whirlwind tour through the economic climate and some of the projects we're working on. There's supporting slides for a lot more of the stuff that was in there, but I wanted to just be a little more brief today in the interest of time so that you would all be able to talk and we can have a conversation about it. But just rest assured that well, there's an example of yet another slide that's in there because I guess it's got a mind of its own. So that is, as I said, so there's plenty more we could talk about, so I would love to come back. You know, if there's any of those other sections that we didn't get into enough detail for you, let's do this again.
Love it. Thank you, Nate. Does anyone have questions that they would like to ask or... other pieces? I'm looking at myself on the screen. I hate it when that happens. This is the second or third time that I've heard you present, and I love it. I think there's a level of like real tangible.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to cover myself as I look at you. Can't do it. There's a level of like real tangible connection between what we're doing in this room and what you all are doing in this building into the community. And it really is very meaningful. So I just want to, like, kudos to all the work you're doing and to coming and spending time with us. So thank you for that. Anyone else?
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for the presentation. It's, I mean, just amazing. Like, I got to go to the the winter greenhouse event with my daughters, and they absolutely loved it, and we're looking forward to going to Bites and the Lights, and just hopefully our, I mean, when the Norse City, whatever the official name ends up being, but it's collective, but just all the fun and just good activities, the pop-ups, it's just really great to see.
These food trucks are going to blow up my food budget. But maybe I don't have to cook.
Groceries can be very expensive, too.
I mean, they are, yes, that. Exactly. Like, it's just that, you know, sometimes I'm supposed to cook for my family, apparently. That's what people tell me. Do we time frame on the North food truck situation?
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's in the early stages, but, like,
yeah,
a couple of years?
Yeah, it's a great question. Ideally, food trucks are, you know, like I said before, kind of this innovative, you know, rapid sort of activation. We're hoping that will be more of a longer runway, right? And so there's a little more investment that goes into making that happen. And so there, right now we're in conversations with Seattle City Light, like I said, to make sure that we'll have an agreement in place that allows for us to do something along those lines. All the conversations we've had so far, you know, staff to staff, not like council to council or mayor to mayor, you know, but have been very positive and seem to indicate that that's very possible. You know, but yeah, there's still a lot to be sorted out as far as what the timing might look like. We would be potentially looking at waiting until we have an interlocal agreement in place. Right now we have this interim use agreement that only goes through the year. It's basically a one-year agreement that can be renewed. We're on their schedule, so to speak, from what we've been told, that for the interlocal agreement to be considered by their council next year. We're hoping early next year. And it's been kind of discussed for several years, again, at the staff-to-staff level, mm-hmm. and just trying to kind of get it onto their agenda for them to look at it. It's non-controversial, which is nice, but that also makes it hard for it to raise to the level of attention for them. And for a more interim approach of activating the space without having an interlocal agreement in place, that would require more investment from the city. But like I said, we're also having conversations with our legislative delegation. If we were successful in receiving funding through the legislature in this upcoming session, what I understand is those dollars would be available to us in July, I believe is when that was. So, you know, then you sort of think about the construction timeline for roof replacement of that building, building out restrooms inside, power conduit put into the ground, you know, fencing and some of that landscaping and things like that. We don't have a project manager on board, you know, or a project yet,
right.
You know, defined. So it's hard for me to put a timeline to that at this point. But that's kind of what we're working with. And there's sort of still a couple different paths for how we might approach it as far as the funding and what the partnerships and arrangements might look like. So that's why it's still a little tough to say what the scheduling might look like. I really tried to say, to try to encourage this, you know, just generators and porta potties for now. Like, can we just do that? So far, we haven't had traction with that concept because, you know, for a really successful hub like that, it does need some of those kind of more, you know, basic amenities. Maybe we'll just move the winter light display over there and then it'll bring everybody to it. I don't know. We'll see how well that goes.
Awesome. Thank you. One other thing that occurred to me in thinking about this, and this is a little bit of my day job, and I know that solid waste is contracted for the city, that we don't do a lot of, Shoreline doesn't do a lot of policy there, but the idea of, there's a lot of innovative stuff happening at Seattle Center around reuse.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of sort of thinking about either compostable, you know, sort of how the waste is generated in that food truck environment would be great. I mean, I think in Portland they actually do dishes in some of their food truck convenings, uh-huh. where they'll have, you know, water cups and plates that get sort of, that are, I think they're shared. Like there's a shared kitchen that runs in there. Of course, that needs to be staffed, et cetera. but just some interesting ways to deal with that kind of solid waste impact.
I'm really glad you brought that up because today, you know, we I was calling because we our order of the bins that we got was not didn't have everything we needed, and I was, man, I really wish we didn't have to just have so much waste. But my first thought was like, there's something we could do with like reusable or dishes, and it just seems so crazy. So I'm really glad you brought it up, and that it's not crazy.
It's not crazy.
Really
it's actually happening.
Yeah.
And a really they're testing out some really interesting.
It's doable. It's
pilots.
It's being tried.
Yeah.
We can watch that very closely and see how it goes. That's great.
Awesome.
Kind of on that point, there I know there's some companies out there that actually do like. Provide, reusable plates, utensils, cups, and then they take them, wash them, mm-hmm. Bring them back to places like that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be an on-site thing. That might be a little bit more affordable for these smaller places, too.
Yeah. Yeah, rather than building out a full kitchen with the dishwashing setup and everything. We certainly do that for our events now. When we have events, we've switched to asking the caterer to arrange for that stuff to be delivered, and like you said, that's the delivery company will take it back clean or dirty. It just the price is different, but it's not complicated. It's a thing that they already do, so that's great to bring that up.
Yeah, I also one is a question that I have. So are all these, like the food truck hub, does it only happen, in your reaching outreach or to other cities, is that always happen on public or in public control, public property?
Yeah, not necessarily, yeah.
Okay.
The one group that we are talking to that kind of started all of this,
yeah.
Asked for us to sell the property to them multiple times before we were able to finally convey that we don't actually own it. It's Seattle City Lights property, and they're not going to sell it to anybody. We were hoping they would sell it to us, but they certainly will operate these on private property. That's actually their preference.
Is it because of the regulation faster, easier to set up?
It's a little more flexibility for them and direct sort of control. So, again, there's a different sort of multiple different paths we might go down. And if we were to get the funds ourselves to implement something ourselves, we would want a group like that or multiple groups to consult on it and give us good direction, because I don't do this every day as my day job, but they do. And I think so having some involvement from them is good, but in their minds, the ideal scenario is where they have total control and the creativity, the creative flexibility to do it as they see fit. And so that is where if they could purchase the property, then they would be able to implement their vision and do what they know will work, right? They've also proposed to invest in the property. And then the more money that they're maybe putting into it, then the longer time horizon of like a long-term ground lease is they would need to sort of recoup that initial investment through the revenues of running the operation. So there's a couple of different ways that it could go.
I understand. And I'm thinking there is also a possibility that a private business, say, the ownership of the property not necessarily be the one who manage or operating.
Right.
So there must be that type of agreement or arrangement.
Yeah, that's an option as well.
Right, because, I grew up in Taiwan, and Taiwan's night market is pretty famous.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to see that this can be a possibility that we have gone to a level of, our community has matured to a level that we may need this type of arrangement to to have a more flexible gathering or event space that and the city is in an effort to support to make it happen. It's really exciting to see, and thank you for the work going toward that direction to activate our community. Just want to add on, so we also are, besides this, like the lights and bites, the type of events, so are there, like, are we in contact with a organization that support, like, they basically arranging or support this type of, they, like, looking for the possible location, attracting them to short to look at Shoreline as one of the possible, like, pop-up hub? I don't know how, yeah. Because I've seen it in Taiwan as a kind of a, within a city, it's activation strategy, like,
yeah.
Coordinate with private partnership or management or the startup. Kind of, I don't know how to call them. It's they curate the like our farmers market, but their focus is on art or crafts or specialty products.
Yeah.
And I think.
Yeah, and I think this process, if we do it right, it'll reveal more of those potential partners that do that kind of thing that you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
That's certainly our intention.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
We know a few different partners that we could work with that we did not know were out there. And so it's a great opportunity for us to find out, you know, more of who else is out there through, you know, RFP, you know, request for proposal or what have you. So that's certainly a great way to proceed when kind of don't know who's out there, but you know that there are some people that are out there. So, yeah. And hopefully there will be multiple opportunities like this, you know, all over.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Awesome. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Moving on to my favorite list of things. Unfinished business. Nope. New business. Nope. Sometimes I move too fast. Reports and announcements. No?
I didn't. No, I do actually have a couple of announcements tonight.
All right, go.
First off, so on Monday evening, the council is going to be discussing the critical areas code recommendation that you all passed on a couple of meetings ago, or maybe it was just last meeting, I can't remember, but so that'll be discussed on Monday night, and then action on that is tentatively scheduled, I think, for mid-December, so just something to be aware of. And then secondly, we have opened recruitment for the Planning Commission vacancies that are upcoming. Spring seems like a long time away, but we're starting that recruitment process. So that's kicked off. So applications are due January 9th. If you know of anyone in your networks that might be interested in serving on the Shoreline Planning Commission, of course you need to be a Shoreline resident, but... yeah, or property owner. Thank you. Yes. Then definitely help spread the word.
Great. And existing commissioners whose terms are up apparently have to reapply.
That's right. And we do have one position that's terming out, which is Michelle.
Yes.
Be ending her second four-year term.
She's graduating from her eight-year experience. We will celebrate that. All right, our agenda for our next meeting, which is December 4th.
Yeah, so on December 4th, we'll be discussing the light rail sub-area plan updates, so providing a little bit of background on those sub-area plans and then also laying out the work plan as we embark on the update process.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. Anything else for the good of the order? No, we are adjourned. Thank you.